Good morning. This is the KVU Morning News for Monday, January 2nd, 2007. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Chris Andre. Coming up this morning, the EPA faces an avalanche of lawsuits over new pesticide rules.
U.S. deaths in Iraq reached 3,000 on Sunday. And in Iraq, civilian deaths reached an all-time high in December.
Portland area weather cloudy with a slight chance of rain this morning, then rain increasing, highs 50 to 55. Tonight, rain, snow in the Cascades, windy along the northern coast, lows in the 40s. A new Oregon law kicks in as of 2007, requiring health insurance plans throughout the state to extend the same coverage to mental illnesses as they do to physical ones. The new law affects group health plans that collectively insure more than a million Oregonians, but excludes federal workers, individual health insurance policies, and people on Medicare or Medicaid who already have parity. The U.S. Surgeon General estimates that each year nearly one in five Americans experiences a serious mental disorder such as a major depression, psychosis, schizophrenia, or obsessive-compulsive disorder. One-third of worker disability claims involve mental or behavioral health. The State Insurance Division has been working to define mental illness since lawmakers passed the new law in 2005. The rules also define chemical dependency as addiction to drugs or alcohol, but not tobacco. Such broad definition of mental illness, plus inclusion of drug and alcohol addiction, make Oregon's parity law one of the nation's strongest.
School advocates have cheered Governor Ted Kulongoski's proposal for a $750 million-plus increase in state support for schools. But a new analysis by the Oregonian shows that at least $500 million of that will have to cover salary increases, rising employee health costs, pension contributions, rising enrollment, and higher prices for supplies and services. That leaves little money left over for pet priorities like reducing Oregon's class sizes, which are among the nation's largest, and for programs to add reading tutors and teacher mentors. Oregon's school employee benefits are the fourth highest in the nation as a percent of payroll. It could be politically tricky for the governor or legislators to dig into possible cost reductions of those items. The state teachers union backed many of the winning Democratic legislators, and Kulongoski, a Democrat, also relied on campaign support from teachers and public employees. Kulongoski also wants to beef up a rainy day fund for schools and state services to help prevent cuts in the next downturn, but both those scenarios depend on the economy continuing to grow.
The Environmental Protection Agency. We'll have that story in just a moment. Now, the Environmental Protection Agency is facing an onslaught of lawsuits from both the pesticide industry and environmental activists over a new rule on pesticide use in or near water. Lawsuits have been filed in 11 of the nation's 13 circuit courts, including the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco, which serves Oregon. Environmentalists say the EPA has knowingly violated a court decision in an Oregon case that would have meant fewer pesticides flowing into Oregon rivers. Pesticide manufacturers count a new rule doesn't do enough to protect them from unnecessary and costly government regulation. Previously, commercial pesticide users have needed only a license and a commitment to follow the instructions on the product label, regardless of whether the pesticide is applied on land by aerial spraying or directly into the water. The Clean Water Act, though, has much stricter controls. The Act requires that anyone discharging pollutants into the nation's waterways must have a permit to do so. The Ninth Circuit Court found in one landmark case that even though the irrigation district followed the label extract directions of a pesticide, it was pollutants discharging into a waterway and therefore needed the special permit.
In the Salem area, residents of Spring Lake Estates, Twin Lake Estates, and individual homes throughout the area have joined together in an attempt to block the development of 43 homes on 217 acres. Their main concern is that there won't be enough water to go around. The limited water supply long has been a concern among neighbors in the community south of Salem. As a result, water use has been frequent fodder for discussion. Everyone knows who drilled a deeper well or a second well, who bought a storage tank, and where any new developments are proposed. but with the passage of Measure 37, the neighborhood's concern about water supply has turned to alarm. Residents say that Measure 37 threatens to eviscerate the land use rules that were specifically implemented to protect the area's limited supply of groundwater. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Climate change could lead to hotter, drier heat waves, heavier rains, and quicker snow melts in the future. Scientists say this could bring a change in the taste of Oregon's signature Pinot Noir wines. Vintners are already shifting their vines uphill to keep them cool during warmer summers, but researchers forecast that by the end of the century, Pinot Noir grapes will grow better along Washington's Puget Sound than they do in the Willamette Valley. Recent November shows that heavy rains in Verbs past November were a preview of the future in the Northwest. Heavier rain will begin earlier in the winter. Rain will fall in place of snow, even in the mountains. And all that extra rain will rush downstream, posing the threat of floods. The storms are expected to collide more directly with the Cascade Range, which may wring yet more moisture from the clouds. As more rain falls, the same rivers and streams are left to drain an overwhelming amount of runoff, leading to more chance of flooding, particularly on the west side of the Cascades. Summers, too, will be increasingly parched as a result because rainwater vanishes quickly compared with snowmelt, which will be in short supply. Hotter days will only accelerate the drying.
Promoting locally grown products, Oregon Agriculture Director has helped the state's farmers. The Oregon Department Director, Katie Koba, says it can't replace marketing to national and international customers. Koba expects Asia to remain a high priority for the agricultural industry marketing efforts in 2007, with Japan remaining Oregon's top export customer. Federal Sola Epicurical, a free trade agreement with South Korea, might be produced in 2007 that would bode well for Oregon agricultural products. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
Oregon may have pioneered early voting, but now voters elsewhere are following suit, forsaking the traditional election trip day to the polling places. Paul Gronke, director of the Early Voting Information Center at Reed College in Portland, estimates that about 30% of voters in the November election either cast their ballot by mail or filled it out in the early election centers set up by some states. That's more than double the 14% of voters who cast an early ballot in 2000, the year Oregon began conducting all of its voting by mail.
All on the Idaho-Washington border, workers are crossing the Great Divide to take advantage of Washington State's higher minimum wage. That's because Washington's minimum wage is more than $2 higher than Idaho's $5.15, and it just went up again Monday from $7.63 to $7.93. It applies to workers in both agricultural and non-agricultural jobs, according to the State Department of Labor and Industries. And it's recalculated each year for workers age 16 and older based on cost of living increases.
In San Francisco, 10 more protesters were arrested yesterday by police at the Golden Gate Bridge. Members of the group called Code Pink were taken into custody when they crossed the police line and tried to march across the bridge to protest the war in Iraq. Authorities said the group did not have the proper permit. The protest backed up traffic on the bridge for about 3 hours. Police were stopping even the people who simply wanted to walk across the bridge during the protest.
U.S. deaths in Iraq war reached 3,000 on Sunday, even as the Bush administration sought to overhaul its strategy for an unpopular conflict. The death of a Texas soldier announced Sunday by the Pentagon raised the number of U.S. military deaths in Iraq to at least 3,000. At least 67 members of the military with strong Oregon ties have died during service in Iraq and Afghanistan.
All across the nation yesterday, over the holidays, U.S. peace groups pledged to start the new year with protests and vigils to mark the death of the 3,000 U.S. soldier in Iraq and to press their call for an end to the war. A group of U.S. veterans that sets up crosses on a Santa Monica, California beach every Sunday to remember American soldiers killed in Iraq added candles to mark the 3,000 milestone. United for Peace and Justice, a coalition of more than 1,300 U.S. peace groups, urged demonstrators to wear black armbands or ribbons with the number 3000 in white print, and to phone radio stations and write letters to newspapers to call attention to the death toll. This according to Reuters.
The outgoing U.S. commander in Afghanistan predicted more fighting this spring and summer and said Taliban militants would try to overrun towns to unhinge the Afghan morale. Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry also said the recent killing of a high-level Taliban commander shows that fugitives like Osama bin Laden and Mullah Omar will one day slip up and that the U.S. will strike. Eikenberry, who is expected to rotate out of Afghanistan in late January, said he expected militants this spring to attack border security posts, to extend their use of suicide bombs, and to mass in groups of 25 to 100 for assaults on towns that serve as seats of local government. But Eikenberry said none of the Taliban's efforts would significantly provide a military challenge for U.S., NATO, and Afghan forces, which he said have improved greatly in the last year. Violence rose sharply in Afghanistan in 2006, killing an estimated 4,000 people, the deadliest year since the U.S.-led coalition swept the Taliban from power in 2001.
Chief Justice John Roberts says in a year-end report critical of Congress that pay for federal judges is so inadequate that it threatens to undermine the judiciary's independence. Issuing an eight-page message devoted exclusively to salaries, Roberts says the 678 full-time U.S. District Court judges, the backbone of the federal judiciary, are paid about half that of deans and senior law professors at top schools. 38 judges have left the federal bench in the past 6 years and 17 in the past two. Roberts says the issue of pay has now, quote, reached the level of a constitutional crisis, unquote. Legislation languished in Congress in 2006 that provided a 16% increase in federal judges' salaries. The bill was introduced by Democratic Senators Dianne Feinstein, Patrick Leahy, and John Kerry of Massachusetts. It's the first time in the two-decade history of year-end reports by Roberts and his predecessor, the late William Rehnquist, that the Chief Justice's message has focused entirely on a single subject.
A major California prison riot broke out on Saturday involving 800 inmates. It started when a black and a Hispanic prisoner began fighting, prompting other prisoners to join divided along racial lines. More than 50 people were treated for injuries suffered in the Saturday riot at the California Institution for Men in Chino, east of Los Angeles. Guards battled for 4 hours to quell the fighting. Inmates in California's prisons often join racially based gangs and shun interaction with those from other races. Officials brought in reinforcements from other prisons and local police, both to regain control of the prison and ensure that no one had escaped from the area during the fighting. This according to Reuters.
Scientists have genetically engineered a dumb cow to be free from the proteins that cause mad cow disease. This is a breakthrough that may make the animals immune to the brain-wasting disease. An international team of researchers from the United States and Japan reported on Sunday that they had knocked out the gene responsible for making the proteins called prions. The disease didn't take hold on brain tissue from two of the genetically engineered cows was exposed to bad prions in the laboratory. Experts said the work may offer another layer of security to people concerned about eating infected beef, although any food derived from genetically engineered animals must first be approved by the Food and Drug Administration.
In Chicago, a group of United Airline employees swear they saw a mysterious saucer-shaped craft hovering over O'Hare Airport last fall. The workers, some of them pilots, said the object didn't have lights and hovered over an airport terminal before shooting up through the clouds, according to a report in Monday's Chicago Tribune. The Federal Aviation Commission acknowledged that a United supervisor had called the control tower at O'Hare, asking if anyone had spotted a spinning disc-shaped object. But the FAA says controllers didn't see anything, and a preliminary check of radar found nothing out of the ordinary. At least one O'Hare controller, union official Craig Berzick, was amused at all. Berzick says, to fly 7 million light years to O'Hare and then have to turn around and go home because your gate was occupied is simply unacceptable.
tested the hangar for the hot and the image from and a photo of the leader suggested the outlaw monument native in a crash coat thing of yes I'm saying across Iruni yes H.O.S. military old ice tanky muffin or a great golden zoom and he's fine in a Iruni political nominal figure government today of his protest came on a day that swept all the electric kicks are off stayed on the office but avoided taking a derogate of a prompt to who is this to any to quick the smell of gays were not out by heels many were in the room in the exchange of a catered on the art in a rock by sanctuary most the tuning for tough sympathos in a military and conflict the current system of captada mutatada Pouncery cleric who runs their rigged foil religious and imperial militias. He is aimed on the major execution behind the government of Shia Prime Minister Asik Al-Maliki.
A senior minister has told Roy Law U.S. and 8th Dimension Court Sugar Lickets not brought Bill down whose gap is entered a television spectacle that has inflamed the Jamestarian anger. Doctors Mr. Shuing Nuri Amal hanging the former president just like is at the government wait, but in 2 weeks. The government released video hangman chatting to unquote still close Saddam as he puts a noose around Al's neck. Mobile phone footage on the web guards shouting quote, go to handy name of a Shiite militia leader, hope, and exchanging insults Elvis ultimately even Saddam before he fell through the trap in Shiite prayer, and it is suffering body swan, broken necked. Timothy on the road. More than Saddam's ex-daughter and some residents of Jushail, led to his conviction for crimes against Anand, joint reporting to Reuters.
The Iraqi government yesterday, the close of the Baghdad office of a Dubai-based television station, newscast a wall black mourning clothes while reporting on the hanging of Hussein. A spokesman for the Interior Ministry said the Al-Sharqiya station had incited violence and hatred in its coverage and had ignored warnings to stop. The spokesman said the order was issued after an allegedly false report by the news channel about the abduction of 3 Sunni Arab female students from a university. But the order also followed criticism of the tone of the Al-Sharqiya's coverage of Saturday's execution, which struck some as sympathetic to the ousted leader. In contrast to the state-run television reports that described Saddam as a tyrant and criminal, a newscaster on Al-Sharqiya referred to him as president.
The number of Iraqi civilians killed in political violence edged to a new record high in December after a big leap the previous month. The statistics, widely viewed as an indicative but only partial record of violent deaths, showed 12,320 civilians were killed in 2006 in what officials classified as terrorist violence, half of them in the last 4 months. The ministry figure of 1,930 civilian deaths in December is 3.5 times the figure of 548 for January, before the surge in sectarian killing, which followed the destruction of a major Shiite shrine in February. All such statistics are controversial in Iraq. A figure of 3,700 civilian deaths in October, the latest tally given by the United Nations based on data from the Health Ministry and the Baghdad Morgue, was branded exaggerated by the Iraqi government. This, according to Reuters.
Palestinian gunmen kidnapped a Peruvian photographer working for Agence France-Presse in Gaza yesterday. This, while militants were seized and freed in separate abductions that sparked new violence between rival factions. There is no immediate claim of responsibility for the abduction of the photographer named by the French news agency and Palestinian security sources as Hemi Rasouri. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's office said in a statement that Abbas condemned the kidnapping and had called for all Palestinian security forces to search for and free the man. This from Reuters.
East Timor's prime minister urged Osama bin Laden to extend his love to Christians and Europeans and give up violence in a Christian message broadcast around the world by the British Broadcasting Corporation. BBC Radio invited José Ramos Horta and other world leaders and personalities to send a seasonal message to an individual or a group of their choosing. Ramos Horta won a Nobel Peace Prize for his nonviolent resistance to the Indonesian occupation of his tiny homeland, which won its independence in 1999 in a UN-sponsored ballot. In his message broadcast on the BBC's World Service, he said that East Timor had been invaded by mostly Muslim Indonesia, and several of his brothers and sisters were killed. He urged bin Laden to extend the same love he feels towards the Palestinians, to Europeans and Christians.
South Korea's Ban Ki-moon has taken over as Secretary General of the United Nations. Ban is the first Asian to hold the post in 35 years. The South Korean former foreign minister is the organization's eighth leader and succeeds Kofi Annan, who was at the helm for 10 years. Ban faces a number of global crises, as well as reform of the United Nations itself. He has vowed to be a bridge builder and a harmonizer, and to set the highest ethical standards. One key challenge the new Secretary General inherits from Annan is trying to get the Sudanese government to accept a joint UN-African Union peacekeeping force in Darfur. Ban will also hope to bring his regional experience to the thorny question of North Korea. The U.S. is leading a drive for greater reform of the United Nations, and analysts say Washington will expect Ban to deliver, having strongly backed his candidacy. This from the BBC.
Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has rejected calls for the release of six foreign medics sentenced to death for infecting children with HIV/AIDS. Those who committed crimes must accept the consequences, he said. Libya has been under increasing pressure because of international doubts over the fairness of the trial. Five Bulgarian nurses and a Palestinian doctor have been tried and found guilty twice of deliberately infecting more than 400 children with HIV. Colonel Gaddafi stressed the independence of the Libyan judicial system, and he rejected what he called Western intervention and pressure in this affair. The medics have been in detention since 1999, during which time 52 of the 426 infected children have died of AIDS. This from the BBC.
The newly elected president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Joseph Kabila, has named a former opposition figure as the country's prime minister. The nomination of Antoine Gizenga, leader of the Unified Lumumbist Party, or PALU, was widely expected as it had figured in electoral accords. Gizenga must now nominate ministers to form a government. Kabila is the Democratic Republic of Congo's first freely elected leader in 40 years, having won October's runoff presidential poll. The 35-year-old took power in 2000 after his father was assassinated and won. This from the
Bunza Zapatista rebels, yes,
BBC.
Yesterday celebrated as the 13th anniversary of their uprising against the Mexican government, dancing, singing, and holding to the poor Indians in the southern state of Chiapas. The ceremonies, which attracted hundreds of foreigners from numerous countries, began under the stewardship of Subcomandante Marcos, the Zapatista leader. Participants saluted the Mexican and Zapatista flags and held a large dance and ate traditional tamales and coffee in the Zapatista's base of Zoovenctic, about 460 miles southeast of Mexico City. The Zapatistas seized the main city of San Cristobal de las Casas and other Chiapas communities in the name of socialism and Indian rights on January 1, 1994. A ceasefire ended fighting between rebels and government forces after a few days, and the two sides have since maintained an uneasy truce. Yesterday was the first time in many years that Marcos attended anniversary celebrations. On last year's anniversary, Marcos began a nationwide tour in an attempt to forge a now leftist movement. This, according to The Guardian.
At least eight blasts rocked Bangkok on New Year's Eve. Thai Prime Minister Suraya Chulayan has blamed ousted politicians for the series of bomb blasts that killed three people and injured 38. Suraya did not name anyone but pointed the finger at, quote, all those who have lost power in the past, unquote. Suraya was appointed by the military after it had forced Thaksin Shinawatra from office in September. The government cancelled Bangkok's New Year's celebrations and called an emergency meeting on the attacks. This from the BBC.
Israel says it's doing what it can to eliminate a royal stink that developed along its border with Jordan. That's after Jordanian King Abdullah II complained of a less than princely odor wafting from the Israeli side of the country's shared southern border. Israel's environmental minister said yesterday that Jordanian officials last week asked that the stench from a livestock quarantine facility in Eilat be neutralized after it drifted across the border frontier of Abdullah's palace in Aqab toward Abba. Upon the officials immediately spent receiving the complaint, Israeli spread deodorants around the site to clear the air and planned a thorough cleanup shortly. Israel has ordered the owners of the facility to clean up large amounts of animal waste, the ministry spokesman Sharon Akhtu said.
Somalia's transitional government has issued an urgent appeal to Kenya to seal their common border to prevent fleeing Islamist forces from crossing over. There's been no formal response, but a large convoy of armored vehicles was seen heading toward the border in the eastern Kenya-Somali Bunyan town of Garissa. The appeal came after the Islamists were driven from their last stronghold, the southern port of Kismayo. The Union of Islamic Courts, or the UIC militia, abandoned the town overnight. Local militias briefly took control before a combined Somali-Ethiopian force entered the port city to what local correspondents say was a big welcome. Somali Prime Minister Ali Mohamed Gedi has urged the African Union to send peacekeepers and offered an amnesty to Islamist fighters. The Islamists had swept through Somalia last year, and their retreat from Kismayo is seen as a major reversal. The presence of Ethiopian troops on Somali soil could damage the government's attempts to win widespread support. This, according to the BBC. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Monday, January 2nd, 2007. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support. If you have not become a card-carrying member of KBOO yet, well, it's never too late to have a happy membership.
Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. And Kathleen Stevens is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Chris Andre. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR, and worldwide at kboo.fm.
Portland area weather, cloudy with a slight chance of rain this morning, then rain increasing. Highs 50 to 55. Tonight, rain, snow in the Cascades, windy along the northern coast, and lows in the 40s.
You too can volunteer and learn new skills in the KBOO AM newsroom. To do that, you can pick up the phone, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 2022, or you can also reach her by email at amnews@kboo.org.
And coming up this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Abe Proctor and Joe Uris host the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. They'll look at the year 2006 in review.
At 9 on Between the Covers, host Ed Goldberg interviews local author John Teaton, author of Upsurge, a novel that blends contemporary realism, psychological fantasy, politics, and science fiction to tell the story of a visionary scientist and his family.
At 9:30 on Black Book Talk, O.B. Hill, Patricia Welch, and M. Jackson Ford focus on books by black authors.
At 10, Bruce Silberman interviews Sharon Wood Waltman and her husband Ed Waltman about the new edition of their book, The Portland Bridge Book, a history of the bridges spanning the Willamette and Columbia Rivers in Portland.
At 10:30, it's Stage and Studio with D. May Roberts, and at 11, it's Democracy Now!